Welcome back to our second hour of World Crisis Radio. I'm your host, Webster Topley, speaking from Washington, D.C. It's our last program of 2008. Congratulations to all who have come through the storms of 2008. Above all, the great battle to expose Barack Hussein Obama as a puppet of the Wall Street finance oligarchy, the chosen vehicle for a new round of crushing, brutal austerity and foreign adventurism and war, hand-picked and trained, brainwashed even, by the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberger Group, and company, with Zbigniew Brzezinski's ideas for foreign policy playing a very, very prominent role in all of this. And we want to remember, you've got to, if you haven't already bought them, you've got to pick up your copies of Obama, the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate, and Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography. Both of these are available at Amazon.com, and they will become, I think, more and more widely read in the coming year as the crisis of the Obama regime becomes more and more evident. But stepping back from that again, the basic problem is that not only is Obama, he is who and what he is, but that he is the vehicle of this decadent, degenerate, depraved ruling elite. And again, their cultural idea is that derivatives have value, and they're trying desperately to maintain the value, the price, if you will, of a derivatives bubble, which has gotten up to 1.5 quadrillion. The way that bubbles come about is, first of all, through deregulation, through insufficient government intervention. Derivatives, you'll remember, were basically illegal from the good old days of the New Deal, the wise policies of Franklin D. Roosevelt and the coalition around him. From 1936 to 1982, derivatives were illegal, banned, federal crime, couldn't be made to stand up in court. You could not collect on derivatives. Along comes stupid Ronald Reagan, spouting nonsense about how government is always part of the problem, spouting Friedmanite Austrian school slogans and nostrums. Reagan takes the first step in 1982 to legalize derivatives. Then, 1993, Wendy Graham, the wife of the noxious free market ideologue Phil Graham, senator from Texas, would-be president, plutocrat, friend of McCain later on, so horrendous that he got himself booted off the campaign tour because he said, it's not a depression, it's just that people are whining. That's good Friedmanite Chicago school, von Hayek Austrian school, garb ideology coming from old Phil Graham. And Phil Graham's wife, Wendy Graham, says, yes, it's going to be a safe haven. The Commodity Futures Trading Corporate Commission declares that derivatives will be not just legal, but protected by us. Other attempts to regulate derivatives during the 1990s by Brooks Liborn, later head of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, blocked by the free market lunatic Alan Greenspan, the Ayn Rand fanatic who believes in wolf eat wolf, dog eat dog, Ayn Rand economics. That's where derivatives came from. The derivatives bubble came from deregulation. And it also came from privatization, the privatization of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Fannie Mae, in particular, worked fine from the 1930s to the late 1960s as a government agency. It was then privatized under the impact of Milton Friedman, the Chicago School, von Hayek, and the Austrian School. And that's when the problems began. Deregulation, privatization, union busting under the Taft-Hartley Law. The right-to-work states where no unions are allowed, union busting. And that means not only are most unions not created, most people don't join, but the unions you have become perverted to people like Andy Stern of the Service Employees International Union and the Acorn crowd. That's what happens when you strangle the impulse for working-class representation. And that, indeed, is the whole point. that in the 1920s, you can see it very clearly, there are bankers, there are people like Andrew Mellon, and then there's the elected government of Harding, Coolidge, Hoover. They're all spouting free market, free market. And the bankers basically tell the federal government what to do. Result, Great Depression. You get out of the Depression thanks to Franklin D. Roosevelt, New Deal, but above all, to mass struggle. Indeed, to class struggle. Without class struggle, you don't get out of it. Now, class struggle doesn't mean the Soviet form of this. It doesn't mean that you're going to try to wipe out a class, because you can't. Remember that oligarchy is an ontological feature of the human condition. In other words, what does it mean? There's the one, the few, and the many. As long as you have human individuals, you'll have one who could become an autocrat or a tyrant. You have the few, the oligarchs. They can become an oligarchy or an aristocracy. And you have the many who can become a democracy or a mob, an ochlocracy. And the problem is the solution to the human condition is found in none of the above. The only hope for the human condition, as Machiavelli realized in the Discourses, and John Adams rightly and wisely incorporated into the Massachusetts Constitution, which became the model of the U.S. federal constitution, you've got to take the struggle of the one, the few, and the many, and build that into the government, and have those conflicts fought out, because conflicts inevitably there will be. But the conflicts have got to be fought out by peaceful means inside the government, and that's the only hope. That's the separation of powers, that is the branches, the checks and balances, and so forth. And it's also the idea that the president can be autocratic, perhaps, the federal judiciary oligarchical, the Senate more oligarchical. The House of Representatives is supposed to be democratic, and they're supposed to control money. The problem we have is that the House of Representatives right now is, if anything, more oligarchical than the Senate. So the healthy balance of the three, of the one, the few, and the many, has been lost. And all you're trying to do is to restore the healthy balance. You're not trying to exterminate anybody, but to restore the healthy balance of those so that these things get fought out. One of the things you've got to do is wipe out the Federal Reserve, nationalize the Federal Reserve, incorporate it as a bureau into the Treasury so that the size of the money supply and the interest rates and the preferred categories of lending are all determined by public laws. So you put the economic policy back into politics and attract more people into politics so that you can redress the balance against oligarchy and in favor of more democracy. Yes, indeed, that is the goal. More democracy, less oligarchy, and, of course, less autocracy, although it's not like we've seen very much autocracy lately. That is largely an illusion. Largely what you're seeing is oligarchy, because people like Bush and Obama, who may seem to be tyrannical at various times, are actually puppets. So the problem is you've got a puppet working for an oligarchy. So that is pretty much the situation. I got some interesting emails from people saying, if I don't believe in free markets, do I at least wish that there could be a free market? Now, I'm telling you, free market is an illusion. It's a slave ideology for dupes and suckers. Anybody who comes to you talking about a free market, be it Herbert Hoover, be it Andrew Mellon, be it Al Smith, be it Barry Goldwater, be it Ronald Reagan, down to the present time, this is essentially an exercise in confusion, to put it mildly. There is no such thing as a free market. There never has been, at least since the hunting and gathering time. In other words, the old Stone Age, the cavemen, the foragers, the hunting and gathering societies, the strandlopers, there I suppose you can call that a free market. It's what grows on trees. Free market in our time, you'll never find it. No such thing. What you have, monopolies, cartels, oligopolies, trusts, duopolies. Look where you will, you'll never find a free market on this planet. It cannot exist. It's a myth. It's a slave ideology for dupes. Back in a minute.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Crisis Radio. This is your host, Webster Topley, Washington, D.C. The last segment of our last program here of 2008. And again, let me commend to your kind attention Obama, the postmodern coup, the making of a Manchurian candidate, and Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography, both required reading. You will never know what hit you if you're not familiar with these overviews of the subject, and in particular, the 100 days to fascism from January 20th to May 1st. It's going to be important to distinguish between the actual fascist measures that have to be fought and the window dressing measures, which are actually positive, that will be put in there as bait. So we want to take away the fascist measures but keep the window dressing. In other words, the things that Barkey's going to have to do to try to show that he's at all viable, things like increasing food stamps, increasing unemployment insurance. That's all fine. It's when you get to the part about the derivatives and the derivatives, the neo-derivatives bubble. Let's just remember now, we're talking the U.S. Supreme Court. The justices are John Roberts is the Chief Justice. You want to write to them and say, we demand that you, we respectfully request that you look into the question of why Obama is not qualified to be president, not a natural-born citizen. John G. Roberts, Chief Justice. David H. Souter, S-O-U-T-E-R, Associate Justice. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, G-I-N-S-B-U-R-G, Associate Justice. Antonin Scalia, S-C-A-L-I-A, Associate Justice. John Paul Stevens, S-T-E-V-E-N-S. Samuel A. Alito, A-L-I-T-O. Stephen Breyer, B-R-Y. B-R-E-Y-E-R, B-R-E-Y-E-R, Clarence Thomas, Associate Justice. So you got them. Those are the justices. Send a copy to each of them. And remember then that the address is what we've said. I don't know if I'm going to find this again. Here it is. Supreme Court of the United States, 1 First Street Northeast, Washington, D.C., 20543. Now, we've just to wrap it up, right? You want the free market. You know when you're going to get a free market? If you have total chaos and anarchy, if the central government collapses and you have incipient civil war, social chaos, the breakdown of society, and the collapse of civilization, that will be a free market. So if that's what you want, then say so. Rather than look at abstractions, rather than look at process questions, right? Free market is a process at best. It's like saying changing the way Washington is governed. That's the sort of the idea of free market, right? What comes out at the other side? Why don't you demand rising standards of living? Rising standards of living are the outcome of a successful economy. Increased industrial production, increased population is another sign of a growing economy. As the Spanish said, gobernar es poblar. To govern is to populate. If you're not populating, then you're not governing in any meaningful way. So rather than get into the abstractions, the never-never land, the mythological world of Milton Friedman and Chicago School and the equally bankrupt Austrian school of von Hayek, get back to the American system again. You know the names, Governor Winthrop, Benjamin Franklin, Alexander Hamilton, Henry Clay, Friedrich List, Matthew Carey, Henry Carey, Abraham Lincoln, Justin Morrill, the populists, the Omaha Convention of 1890, the New Deal. And Kennedy, that's the American tradition. That's what we have. No noxious foreign doctrines, but the American system. So the point is that you're going to have a movement that is able to contend for power. Now, this free market stuff is a great anti-government ideology, but nobody can govern with it simply because it's completely mythological. The free market is a cover for what you're actually going to do. And we've heard it from Goldwater. We've heard it from Reagan. We've heard it from Bush. Bush talks about free market all the time. That is the ideology of the reactionary wing of the Republican Party. That's what they talk about. But, of course, what they do is totally different. And that is structural. And that's not a matter of any individual intention. The free market is simply a way to dupe people. Free market sounds good to people who say, well, I've made mine, but now I've got a college education and a home thanks to the New Deal, in effect, but I'm going to make sure nobody else gets it. I'm going to pull up the ladder. Not a morally or politically defensible position. You can't run a society that way. So we'll be polemicizing against that all during the coming year. Now, let's look for a second at the strategic situation in the waning moments of the program today. Notice the pressure on the supply line through Pakistan remains intense. It takes 8 days to go from Karachi up to Kabul and back. For that, you get $200. Lots and lots of people still willing to do it, but the trucks are getting destroyed. The U.S. is now facing the problem that if you put 20 to 30,000 more troops into Afghanistan, you're going to make that supply crisis even worse. How do you supply them? They do not have enough airlift to do it by air. They try to get stuff in through Russia. That means through Turkmenistan, through Tajikistan. Some other places might be involved. Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan might be involved, but primarily Tajikistan and Turkmenistan. Problem is they don't have enough airlift for that. You'd have to be bringing this stuff in through Russia or Iran. Iran, why not run your supply line directly from Iran into Afghanistan? Maybe that's what Barkey wants to talk about with Ahmadinejad. Notice, it's now the end of 2008. Since the beginning of this year, I have been telling you there will be no attack on Iran. There is no attack on Iran. That was a danger in 2007. That was a question of the rogue B-52. That was Cheney's last push, August, September 2007. And then the last, the very last opportunity was when Obama's friend Khalidi invited Ahmadinejad to Columbia University in October of 2007. That would have been the chance for an attentat against Ahmadinejad that might have led to war. Once that had not happened, and once you had the national intelligence estimate of 1 year ago this month, the NIE saying there is no Iranian nuclear program, it was pretty obvious that there was not going to be an attack on Iran. Now what you've got is the attack against Pakistan that we've talked about here all 2008. The attack on Pakistan is in full swing. Why don't they simply recruit Iran? And part of the package, Iran will be getting all kinds of advanced weaponry from the U.S. Why not run the supply line into Afghanistan through Iran? This is probably the first place you've ever heard it, but I think that's a definite possibility for the coming year. The other one is that the natural gas crisis in Eastern Europe is intense. We have Naftogaz of Ukraine. It's bankrupt. Bankrupt. Ukraine is not paying. Ukraine demands that the Russians shovel natural gas across the border as fast as possible. The Russians get paid $179 per 1,000 cubic meters. The Ukrainians turn around and sell that to Germany for $320 per cubic meter. What happens if Ukraine defaults totally? Well, since Ukraine has defaulted totally and Naftogaz is bankrupt and has defaulted totally, what are the Russians going to do? The Ukrainians obviously are going to steal the gas, and they're going to try to cut off the gas to create a crisis. That Pakistan, Ukraine, and of course Susan Rice and her demand to attack Sudan, those are the big topics. 2008 is ending. There has been no attack on Iran. We told you so. The attack on Pakistan is on. The crisis with Ukraine and Eastern Europe is on. And the attack on Sudan is looming. Those are the realities under the Barkey Obama decadent oligarchical regime. Merry holidays to all and a happy new year to all. See you next time on World Crisis Radio.